Hey, folks, welcome to the show. Hey, Sharad, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing very well. And it's an absolute curveball today in terms of what we're going to talk about in the next 30, 35 minutes. Right?
Yeah, I was to prepare for this one, I was reading Carl Sagan's book, The Pale Blue Dot. And it obviously talks about parallel universes and metaverses, but
We come back to a little bit of similarity in the name, I guess.
Yeah, I hope so. So it gives me a great pleasure to welcome Piyush Gupta, CEO of Wasmos. Hey, Piyush, how's it going, man?
Oh, going good. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
No, pleasure's all ours. So you run Wasmos. You guys help, and I quote, D2C brands reach customers in the virtual world. There's a lot to unpack in this statement. I think the first part is pretty clear. The second part is pretty hazy. So, you know, maybe we can start off from the start in terms of what do you guys do at Wasmos? That would be a good way to, delve deeper.
I thought that was a fairly broad ended, but I'll get you a quick idea about, where the space that we are in, right? So Wasmos is purely in the immersive space, the immersive tech space. That's, we kind of focus on making sure that the world that people enter is beautiful, intelligent, engaging, data-driven, which is there. So that's what we do. And we kind of, from a services point of view, we are, whether it is virtual events, whether it is virtual hotels, virtual universities, you'll be surprised, but virtual hospitals, and then so on and so forth. There are a lot of conversations happening on those front. And what we believe is the next change in the internet, right? How you consume content is where things, where we are, right? And currently there is a certain way people consume content, right? It's 2D, it's immersive to an extent, but not beyond. We spend a lot of time in trying to look for content, right? The next change that will happen is what we believe is where you are almost inside everything that you're doing, right? The other aspect that we focus on is we are not, replacing what you do physically. Right. That's the other part. We are saying what you do online, kind of making it better. That's what it is. It's not about, I'm happy to meet you physically now. Now don't meet physically. Now let's only meet virtually. Not really. I think we humans will never want to disconnect ourselves with that aspect of it, right? But whatever you do online, you play, you socialize, you shop, you work, all of that stuff, right? How do we make it more immersive, better? So that's what we've been doing from last few years now. We've kind of, present across the globe because primarily it's a new concept. So we didn't want it to focus on one market and just test it out there. Hence, we kind of, made ourselves present in, in the Asia market, which is India, and APAC region. We kind of have space in Dubai, Mauritius, US, UK is something we've not touched, but that's kind of, how we kind of present across the globe, if I would put that. And some of the conversations we are having every day is phenomenal. The most recent one is someone, one of the European soccer clubs wanting to create a immersive, walkthrough for them, for the fans across the globe who can't travel and see it, right? So all kind of stuff, but that's what we've been doing. Yeah. No, it's interesting, right? I mean, content has, over the last, 10, 15, maybe 20 years, has tried to fight this battle successfully, so to make it more and more immersive and more engaging, right? I mean, IMAX sort of focuses on trying to create as realistic. And now you have theaters with 4D and whatnot, right? So when we sort of speak about your journey and the focus on sort of D2C brands, in a very layman terms, we think of five senses, right? When we talk about immersiveness or engagement, like touch, hearing, smell, taste, and sight. Sight and sort of hearing is sort of feels like there's a lot of progress made, but the other ones seem a lot difficult to tackle, right? That disconnect between real world and virtual world is that also sort of something that working towards is are people working towards that, or sort of is it more about existing technologies, making it better, 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 that you sort of, like the example you gave about a soccer field, to create an environment where you actually feel you're on the pitch playing with one of those guys? Like, how does that, how do you see about that problem statement?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up from a sensory marketing point of view, because not too many people talk about it. That's another big reason why with D2C brands, we kind of, work. Because if you look at it, they don't have a physical presence. Most of them, they're like, are just having websites through which they're trying to sell, or using Instagram to kind of push it through, right? And when we spoke to them, we realized that, the brand is not being created. People buy, and we've done so much of research on asking people, last time when you bought from Instagram through, do you remember the brand? And they just blanked out, right? There are cases where people have said, we ordered, but then we couldn't figure out which brand we ordered, so we couldn't search for it if the brand has forgotten to kind of send it across the stuff, right? And that is where the D2C comes in the picture, where what you're doing is, take a retail store. You're kind of creating a virtual retail store, which has their own address, right? Which is, it is not related to anything. They can just send it across that, hey, this is my address virtually. You go in, the brand colors are there in the sensory marketing space, right? The stuff that we can do so far, right? The colors, the visual part of it, the sound. So there is music that you can add to it. There is AI-driven voice that is there, which you can, customize on the go as you're looking for, right? The touch and feel part of it comes in from a point of view of the whole product being in 3D, and you kind of, almost touching it in the sense that how does it look from top to bottom, turn it around, change the colors if you want. So those aspects are there, and then you kind of, have the entire sales journey that gets attached to it, right? The other aspect which I see from a, brand which we've seen missing is having a touch with the customer executive, right? We kind of buy it, and then we say, okay, if it doesn't work, we'll sell it, right? There's, I don't know if you know the data, but there's 25% almost return ratio in the e-com world. 25% for that kind of industry is huge. And it all kind of creates a huge issue from a sustainability point of view. The entire supply chain gets challenged. What we've seen is because the D2C brands are there on our platform and are able to build a brand, the return ratio has gone down drastically, right? Mm-hmm. So, and the repeat works out better. So there is a brand recall which comes along. People don't have to return it because they are talking to a customer executive, looking at the product in the right way, and then buying it. So that's how we've seen this whole space evolve. The smell and the taste is still, still far away. Yeah. But if you look at it, right, look at the food industry. A lot of times you see the image and you almost like feel that you are, you can feel the taste of it, right? That's what it is. That's what the immersive world does, right? You kind of visually, you can depict yourself saying, okay, yeah, this is what it is, right? For example, just finishing this off is one tech that we are working on is basis the kind of clothing you decide, right? It kind of gives you whether, you are an outlier or you are fashionable.
Right.
So things like that.
Right. So is that the pitch that one can make to a potential D2C brand? Hey, on the revenue side, more immersive experience, you can easily access, get a real life, so there is uptick in the revenue. But on the cost side, you can significantly lower your return ratios. That affects your cost side. So there's an uptick in margins that we can confidently say that data supports. Is that sort of the high-level pitch that one can make to a D2C when you're, showing a solution of solution that you guys have?
These two, definitely. The third one that comes in is the customer insight. So for a D2C brand, when they are buying, they only know who's bought it. They don't know the behavior pattern of individuals who's come in the store, which products that they've clicked and how they've gone through, right? That is a huge plus. Because if I know that this, Sharat has come into the store and, has clicked on these products, right? Imagine I kind of, automating the communication and saying, hey, you like these shoes, here is an offer running in, or there is something similar which is available. Do you want to buy it? So that insight kind of plays in any space. In fact, the customer insights are always good to have. what it also is doing, in the next version which is coming out, is when next time Sharad comes in, he only sees the product which is related to him. So that's how it is. You only see what comes, you know, what your persona fits. You can obviously change and say, oh, no, I want to see a regular store than a customized store. But imagine that's what one can achieve through this.
Piyush, I mean, you know, the immersiveness of the experience and the technology to do it, I think we are already there in the journey, right? Heading towards it. What I often personally fail to understand is the delivery end of it, in the sense that typically, like Sharad mentioned IMAX, right? I mean, okay, that's a certain set of hardware that one can quickly visualize and one knows that, okay, you go there, you get that. Otherwise, at a retail level, typically, you know, the way to access the customer still predominantly is mobile or, you know, desktop or maybe, you know, VR glasses, but that's not mainstream yet. I mean, that's something which is slowly coming into the picture, right? What are your views on delivery here? You know, I mean, what are you seeing in that regard? And I'm assuming that's also a constraint at the moment when it comes to this particular technological piece, that how to make it mass market or mainstream.
Yeah, very important question. I have to say that. So this is where the myth has to be broken, right? Generally, metaverse, when you talk about it, we are talking about VR glasses. We are talking about cryptos and all of that stuff, right? But that's the tech side of it. Mm-hmm. That is when the brands are talking about, you know, this is the tech available. Let me make a solution around it, right? But your customer side of it is the other end of it, where, you know, I don't see it for some time, at least, and I don't know when that will happen, is people having a VR headset along with their phone and moving around, right? I don't see that, or every home having one, right? I was, I've been to a few large electronic consumer shows to just experience whether there is a tech being worked upon, right? It's not there. AR, there is still there. VR, you know, there's still few years at least when you find something which can be more consumed by a larger audience, right? And that's where we differ. So if you look at it, we position ourselves as a meta commerce platform than a metaverse platform, because we wanted to kind of move away from the perception that metaverse comes along. That's it. And the focus is the commerce part of it. We say we will, any brand which comes in, can we help you do transaction? You are, you know, from the financial space, you will understand it more, is you cannot sustain a product if it is not delivering, you know, commercial value. Right. It's just not. From a gamification, you can't survive for long. That's how it is, right? And that is where the change is coming, where we say, can I kind of either help you build a brand, generate a lead, or do sales, right? If this is one of them, we'll do it. Now, when that is what my problem statement that I'm trying to solve, I start with where my customer is. Currently, they are using a 2D website and consuming content, right? I mean, can I make that 3D itself without you needing a VR glasses? Obviously, when you get to a VR glasses, your experience is very immersive. But my customer is not ready for it, right? What we've seen is even the 3D store, which you are kind of using a joystick and, you know, or a button and moving around inside, that itself is an aha moment for most of the consumers, if you look at it, right? So, and that's where what we've built is a web version of it, you know, and rather than just 2D, you kind of, you know, moving around, trying to shop or trying to look for an art or, you know, connect with someone or work. The office space that we've built is beautiful online. So things like that, right? So that's where we are trying to take away the tech constraint out. Mm-hmm. And we say, can, in the given internet scenario, given that, you know, about 40-50% of the world use internet in or social media, if I put it that way, can that be converted into the next level of content consumption?
Right.
Take that one or two steps, hardware piece comes in. That's the journey that we've kind of embarked on.
Are there like specific product categories where you think this works better than others? In the sense that, for example, you know, when it comes to immersive experiences, I mean, like real estate is one of those angles, you know, which adopted it fairly quickly that, yeah, I mean, you know, you kind of get a sense of, but effectively it doesn't always translate into a purchase or a transaction because, I mean, it's larger ticket size and obviously you have to physically live there. So it kind of, you know, there is an offline element which never goes away. Are there, like in your experience, certain, you know, commoditized kind of segments where just the fact that the experience is more immersive actually you know, ends up into better conversion? I would love to hear some insight on that. Yeah.
So the lower end of it is the D2C brands where there are just products, you know, they are trying to sell, as simple as that, right? Which is, you know, and the value of the product can be anything. It can be a, you know, $1 product or a, you know, $100 product or a, you know, fashion brand who's talking to us, which might be, you know, maybe $5,000 or $10,000 product, right? So that's one where you are kind of taking a small space and doing it. Mm-hmm. Totally makes sense, right?
No, but within D2C also, like there are so many sub buckets, right? I mean, for example, if you look at, say, I don't know, like glasses, right? I mean, Lenskart was doing immersive glasses for quite some time, right? Clothes, that makes sense because, you know, you can kind of try and you can kind of, you know, get a more, but I mean, within D2C, you'll also include things like, you know, beauty accessories. You'll also include things like food, like, you know, processed snacks. So within that, like if we want to go slightly more granular, that would be very insightful.
Yeah. So food is something I think we stay away from, right? You know, it's still, I think, let's see how we kind of get that in. But your skin accessories, anything which is a product, right? Your beauty accessories, right? Which also has an element of try on,
right?
That's where, then, you know, you can try the eyelashes, you can try some of those stuff on your face and see how it looks.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's there. All your clothing part of it, your shoes, eyewears are there. Skincare products, there are people who have jumped in. Organic products, which are there. So if I kind of get in, it starts, you know, it's a huge industry, right? Everything that sells on Amazon, if you look at it that way, right? Mm-hmm. All of that, you know, are the low-hanging fruits which people will want to do it. Both in the B2C and the B2B space. So while we are currently talking about the, you know, the D2C part of it, there are brands who are in the B2B space, but selling products, you know, to a larger set of audience, they've also kind of picked it up. So I would, you know, it might be a little difficult to, you know, kind of pick the top three, or I can pick the top three, but I kind of, you know, otherwise there are 100 industries, if you put it that way, you know, okay, or 100 sectors, if I define it further. So that's how it works.
One of the stories is, right, when Jeff Bezos was asked about starting Amazon, he said the first category I went for was books because it seemed like the easiest category. There's literally an unlimited supply of products. And people don't need to engage with it to know if I want that book, I'll buy it. So I guess in the metaverse world, what is that product which seems to be the lowest hanging fruit, right? I mean, which got enough supply, people want to sort of look at it. And real estate, like you said, is an obvious category because you want to see how the house looks from inside. But the ticket price and call to action has such a big lag that it sort of almost doesn't account into the equation. So that's where sort of you're coming from. And this, I mean, on piggybacking on the same thing, right? You sort of said like content, way of creating content. The role of content here is to sort of drive sales, right? I mean, the content itself is not monetizable. It's sort of designed to drive sales. So there has to be some kind of mapping in what content will drive what kind of sales, right? And so how do you sort of think about that with the ultimate aim of picking up the lowest hanging fruit, which is there to sort of sell?
So, you know, you've been mentioning about real estate. I'll cover that and then come to this side.
Yeah.
So the way the real estate piece is working, right? And it's not just in India. For example, you're talking to someone in Vietnam also in their space. I think while it is a big ticket item, it kind of further works for them because one project that we're working on is this thing, you know, when it is not ready, you know, these days a lot of investors from globally, they invest in the project, right? So what they are doing is they are in their, you know, offices in different parts of the country. They are
they are kind of having a sales representative. In this case, VR becomes important. They're kind of taking the VR devices, getting to the customer, showing it to them that this is how it kind of, you know, would your space would look like, property would look like, and all that, right? And then kind of, you know, seeing if the transaction can happen. Early days, but I'm thinking, giving an example of how a real estate is kind of adopting to it, interestingly. Because it is high ticket, they can afford someone picking up those devices, going up to the individual and then showing it to them at the premise.
Yeah.
Imagine, right? Every time, from a concept point of view, it works beautifully because real estate, like you said, you are ideally want to travel to the space, you know, where it is getting built and then buy it. With the whole immersiveness, now you can actually taking the space to where you are and then getting them the experience of how it would come up, right?
Yes.
That's a change that is coming in. Very interesting. Whether when does it become mass, we'll see, but it will, you know, this whole thing will happen, right?
Saying, just on your point, right? What interests me a lot is right now, right? If you look at a really fancy store, let's say in Delhi, and there are so many such stores, right? Where I mean, I believe the nature and quality of product is exactly same that you find in some other place at one-tenth the price. The reason the markup is designed, but because of the experience or what they do to the store and how you feel about it. So the angle to sort of replicate it in a virtual world or a metaverse world, there is validation from the offline world that works. It matters. But a handicap there is, I mean, if Nikhil goes or I go or you go, we'll all see the same store and have the same experience. But in a metaverse, I guess, same store at the same address can have a unique experience for every single individual, right? I mean, if Nikhil likes red, I like blue, you like green, I mean, we can probably see the walls painted in that color, right? I mean, is possible, right? To have different avatars of the same product.
You can. So that's what I'm saying. What the tool can get you to eventually is that basis who you are, your persona, your liking,
yeah. It
can act, you can just, so you enter the store and I enter the store, we both enter the same stores, but it look very different for both of us, you know, from colors, from product, from the conversation that is happening, it will change. So that's, yes, that gives you the benefit or the advantage of being in the world.
You know, you had mentioned like you create like an immersive stores for D2C brands. Like that's one of the services that you provide. Now, how right. What are the mechanics of those services in the sense that is it like do you have a platform product which is like no code and these guys and your client can customize? It's a white label offering which can be customized as per one's requirement, or is it more of a solution that you sell that where you know it's more of individual scoping of requirement and then someone from your team kind of builds it up bottom up?
What we are coming up with, right, is a no code platform.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually, you know, the one which is getting launched as we speak is you can, you know, if you have your content ready, which is, you know, your images of the product and the description of it, you can actually have your virtual store live in about 10 minutes or so. You know, that's how it is. You know, the no code is to the extent of no code. You don't need a tech guy to create it. There are templates which are available for the store. You pick up which works for you, and then you start putting up your imagery, your product. You don't need a 3D product file to show it as a 3D. That's the other aspect of it, right? We've looked at who's my customer at the, you know, who's trying to create it, right? Generally, if you look at it, I'll try to click a photo from a mobile device and, you know, wanting to try to upload it. Will that work? It beautifully does. So what you do is you get in, it's a $59 product per month. That's about it. You go in, you put your store name, and the store name is how you want it to be displayed as your, you know, when you send it as a link to people, right? You give your store name, select your template, select your time zone, you know, and your store gets created. After that, you kind of start getting customized. So in 3 clicks, you can get your store created. And then you start creating your, you know, putting up your products and, you know, other stuff. The beauty of it is, you know, you do it yourself. And for example, today, you know, in the morning you want to sell something, in the evening you want to sell something, you can do that, right? Tomorrow you want to have a different welcome message through an AI bot, you can do it yourself, right? All of that is something you can customize. That's the model that you'll see it coming up, because, you know, I think that's what's going to work.
Right.
In terms of sort of feedback from, let's say, the investor community wider, I mean, is that a challenge for, let me phrase it differently, is the sector evolved enough to gauge the interest of typical institutional investors in India or overseas? Are they still embracing to this, or do you think, you know, there are still time for it to sort of mature and become a standardized? It's still very early. What is the general noise that you hear?
Okay. You know, I can be very candid about investors, but, you know, let me refrain for that. But the thing is, I think people are waiting for it to become mainstream. That's the thing. People say that let more people adopt to it, and then we will jump in. You know, I've spoken to a lot of people. That's the feedback that we've got overall, right? Let's kind of see what the traction is, and then we will put in the money.
Right.
That's how we've kind of seen it. Again, you know, either you look at investor or a strategic partner. I kind of, you know, differentiated that, right? Someone who's putting in the money because thinks that it will kind of, you know, become 10x or whatever in some time, or someone coming in and believing that, you know, this is going to work and let's, you know, build it together and scale it up. Yeah. I think that I'll prefer the second one than the first one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know if that kind of gives you clarity on how the investors are behaving. I've not found too many in the second part of it, by the way.
Right. So, I mean, I guess the idea here is that customer adoption is something which, you know, they're waiting for. Interestingly, you know, the entire narrative around metaverse and immersive experiences also was, I think, strongly, I won't say correlated, but it came in parallel with the pandemic, right? And there was obviously, there was a period of time when suddenly any kind of a digital delivery mechanism got a lot of traction globally, right? You know, like, because I think one of the offerings that you have is setting up virtual events, right? So virtual events during that period of time obviously checks off most of the boxes. But now that obviously things are quote unquote normalizing, do you see that more as a structural trend that, you know, like people are suddenly realizing, yeah, when I set up virtual events, suddenly my audience has just expanded manifold. And, you know, it makes sense for me to do that irrespective. Or do you also see some sort of a correction in that segment?
So look at it this way, right? Obviously, when pandemic hit, it was just like, you know, what to do next, right? And then virtual event went out of the roof, right? It's like everyone wanting to do it because that's the only way to connect. You were kind of, you know, tied. And you'd be surprised that the virtual event, while it kind of hit the roof that time, we've been doing virtual event from, you know, 5 years before,
right?
Not because of any other reason, but because the larger brands, you know, the Dells of the world and all, right? They've adopted to it much earlier, right? They've been doing it. Yes, not at the scale and size of it, but they were doing it believing that, you know, it kind of has some bit of operational cost efficiencies and so on and so forth, right? Has there been a correction? Yes, obviously, you know, things have opened up. So the number of people wanting to do virtual events have gone down.
Right.
The volume which was there has corrected. But what's happened is, if you look at it internationally, about 5 to 7% of the marketing budget of the larger organizations are now going into virtual events. They've kind of said, we will continue to do it,
right?
And that's where we do a lot of work with the largest brands globally and saying, okay, yes, whether it is an AWS or a Dell or some of the other brands, they like continue to do virtual events because they see the value in it.
Right?
Now, why if you look at the correction part of it also, see why it is corrected. When it launched, right, and then kind of in 2020, 2021, right, the cost was significantly higher, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine in a US market, a minimum value of virtual event would be $10,000, you know, and plus. Right? That's how,
right?
Because there was a lot of manpower involved. Yeah. In India also, right, being a cost-sensitive market, was $5,000 and upwards. That's how it is, right? Now, people have started, I think, take India as a market. If I have to spend 10 lakh rupees, you know, on doing virtual events, I might as well, you know, do physical, right?
Right.
Mindset happens, right? In US also, that kind of correction has happened. What's the next trend which we see, right? What we're very sure is virtual events is going to kind of, you know, continue to be part of the armory in the marketing, you know, marketing guys toolkit. Absolutely. That's going to be there. What we think will work is, can we do it, empower you guys to say you can do it yourself, you know, instead of spending $10,000, can you do it in, you know, a few hundred dollars and then take care of
then,
it.
Then the parity makes sense.
That, yeah. So international market is ready for it.
Right.
You know, we've seen it and that's there, right? As India market, DIY doesn't work. That's not there in our DNA, right? I hope that the younger entrepreneurs who are coming up, they kind of adapt to it. That's what we see, that, you know, in the storefront, we've seen that, right? We're launching the DIY virtual events, you know, in a week's time or so as we speak, right? Imagine what you were spending. If one was spending $10,000, you are getting it in $200.
Right.
But you have to do it yourself. You know, in 30 minutes, you can build your own virtual event and you know, connect with audience globally, right? In the language you want, looking beautiful, with your branding, immersive. You can do all kind of engagement, two-way video conferencing, all of that stuff, right? It just totally makes sense for people to pick it up. So we're seeing whether that kind of helps people. Not the larger MNCs, they will not go for it. They will always be, you know, a service model for the kind of work that they do. But can this help for the next level of organizations to adopt and take it up? I think that's where we see things changing.
You know, like I would ask you like a closing question here. Are there any hero brands or are there any like, you know, companies who are really leveraging upon this technology from the standpoint of reaching out to their customers in a very innovative, creative manner? And on the other end, you know, amongst the platforms themselves, like, you know, the big tech platforms, I mean, Facebook made a lot of noise about adopting Meta. Now, obviously, there's a bit of retrenchment there with the latest results. I mean, that commentary is coming out. Amazon is kind of getting big into AR in terms of the, you know, product journey. So I would like to ask you like two ways, you know, within the platforms, where do you see the most amount of traction in terms of adoption and amongst brands, you know, like large companies, if there is any particular company or example you think who are, you know, who have taken a big bet on this segment for their own positioning?
So the second part, which is the brand, which is globally picked up virtual event space and taken up, is Dell. You know, I can say that because we work with them closely in different parts of the world, different geographies. And I think they kind of pick it up nicely, try creating stuff in different ways where it can, you know, being online can be a little more exciting, right? They're trained that way in the sense, you know, their leaders are also kind of prepared to go the next mile and say, let's do something which is a little more creative. For example, we did something, you know, in the Singapore space where someone said, okay, can you actually create my avatar and then get the introduction through that? And then I kind of, you know, come in, right? So it was interesting, but they kind of, you know, so that's one brand I've seen, you know, really picking it up and then continuously building it up also. They were the early adopters in that sense, right? From a virtual event platform point of view, right? There are, globally, there are players who've been there for a very long time, In fact, there are, I think there is one or two are also listed in the US market, either an ON24 or a 6Conex. One of them is, you know, kind of listed there. So they're fairly large, right? Then there is Cvents that kind of, in the global market is doing well, right? Then there is the most fund, you know, the startup which is most funded in this space, Hopin. Right? It's a UK based, you know, got a lot of money, you know, they picked, I don't know the recent investments, but I think they crossed about $300 million or $400 million from an investment point of view. Right? So that's how I see kind of, you know, these are the larger players who are, you know, who've taken a big bet on the tech front and going all out.
Right. And what about the consumer facing platforms? Any thoughts? I mean, I'm not just talking in confines of the virtual events, also in terms of, you know, e-commerce in general via more immersive experiences.
So we've, you know, I think we've not come across something which is, you know, very easy consumer focus platform. It's more of solution driven that is there, right. Which is again, so look at it this way. If you look at some of the platforms which are in the metaverse space, the Decentraland and, you know, a few more which are there, right? What they're trying to do is they're trying to kind of sell space. Mm-hmm. And then there are consumer brands with a lot of fashion brands and stuff have taken the space there. They kind of, you know, while they've taken the space, they've used the space for doing events rather than, you know, having permanent stores. I think that's where we've seen the usage of it, which is there. So, I think Decentraland comes in mind because they're kind of, you know, valued significantly big, and you know, they sell land as such, right? So, I think that's the space that I see. Other brand which is doing well, which should come up, is the Spatial.io. I don't know if you heard about it, but that's other space which is, you know, other organization which we see is doing well from a consumer-facing space.
It was a great pleasure speaking with you, Piyush. And, you know, more power to you and to Osmos. Yeah, and with that, so this is Nikhil Arora, and with me is Sharad Tupran signing off.